when he just wanted to add comedians on Instagram.
Yeah, he talked to me for 2 seconds at the bar and then told me he was networking with me.
And what a waste of his time to network with you.
You bet.
Like, man, if you
and then I bombed and he came past me and he said, good job. And I was like, why don't you fucking kill yourself?
That's what you
That's
said.
What he thinks that I'm like now.
Bad at comedy. So he's an accurate.
Did he receive?
You told me that you think I'm a good comedian, not 5 days ago.
Yeah, but not publicly.
To my face, you said it.
Did he? Did he rescind his networking? He was like, actually, can you?
Fuck, let me check.
Can you unfollow me?
I kind of want to unfollow him. No, he's followed. Yeah, no, he still follows me.
You're right.
Yeah, which is impressive because you're impossible to follow.
Yes.
Because you're such a good comedian.
Yeah, look.
Think about that gig is last night. You did not do the worst on the bill.
I know I didn't, but
not even close.
Yeah, that fucking guy. The girl was bad. And then that guy who just started going, did you guys all just come here to see people strip or something? Yes.
Yeah.
That's the show.
It's called Comedy Strip
Tease. He just started lashing out. Doing that, he got nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome.
You did the show, yeah, Comedy Striptease. Yeah. Were you also on the show, Mike?
No, I was just there.
It was in the audience.
I kind of didn't, I think.
Four friends and two comedians who I very much respect saw me have a bad set.
And also Darius Davies was there.
And Darius Davies was also there, yeah. Yeah, and Milo and Annabelle and Sashi and Charlie were in the audience and watched me fucking suck.
Man.
Yeah.
And did you strip?
You bet.
Yeah, great.
It was such a...
At least they got a show.
It was like watching sort of like comedy seppuku. Like it had a degree of like dignity to it. Like you were just resolutely trying to do a type of comedy that the audience was not interested in. But
no,
you were very calmly just like selling like thoughtful bits that are for like 4 p.m.
I did the bits about the fucking my mate who went to jail for selling drugs, which is for that crowd, but I was already bombing.
Yeah, and you'd gone into the thoughtful rhythm.
Yeah, and they started, they laughed at the right spots, but the laugh was just like, ha, 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 hate you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had that today. I was saying this off mic, but I did a panel show where I just decided to make the crowd not like me and see if I could win.
Mm-hmm.
And they hated me.
Mm-hmm.
And the other comedians hated me. Mm-hmm. But I won.
I should have done that last night when they were doing the clap off to see who would strip. I wanted to go heel, but I didn't have the courage. So yeah. I just fucking...
Heel is fun.
I just let them all put their dicks in my mouth.
I abandoned a set halfway through last night at the Ish Awards comedy showcase because it was just 30 people and half of them were asleep. It was like, it was so bad in there.
When you came in and you were so angry about how that went, I was like, please let me watch you tell Annabelle about this.
I was like, are you all on care? This is like playing the fucking chill out tent at Ministry of Sound. Like, what is going on?
That happened to me at a show where I was in the room and it was just, I'm just very tired. It's warm. My eyes just start drifting. And when I shoot up awake, because I've drifted off to sleep for a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
The comedian looking directly at me.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and then I'm over the top for the next 3 minutes. I'm like, I'm big. I'm laughing. I'm here. I'm present. Oh, no. I didn't drift off at all.
You look directly into the eyes of the comedian and the comedian stares right back.
We saw Alfie Brown together, I don't know, 10 years ago or whenever it was, last weekend. And it's so hot in there and I drifted off to sleep. I was so tired and woke up and he was talking about how his dad died. And I was like, well, I guess I've missed that 20 minutes of material that I really would have loved to hear because Alfie's one of my favorite acts.
Yeah.
And then after the show, we were walking out and he saw me. He was like, hey, mate. And I was like, great style.
What are you going to say? Oh, I fell asleep.
Yeah.
Trying not to think about this forever.
I found the stuff about your dead dad very soporific.
Yeah. I won't go and see it again, but I was gutted. I love Alfie.
Yeah, go see it again.
It was a good show.
I'm sure I'll see it at some point.
I'll catch you up. I'll give you the cliff notes on the bit that you fell asleep to. I was the only one who stayed awake through the whole thing. I was locked in.
The sleep
in.
Is a trauma response. The whole audience fell asleep
at
the mention.
Tired people, they're going to fall asleep.
And midnight show.
Yeah. Midnight show is rough, but we're not here to talk about that.
No,
we're here to talk about I'm Alan Partridge season 2 episode 6. It's the final episode of Alan Partridge.
Finale.
I didn't realize that this show was such a short run. The flame that burns twice as bright burns half as long.
I know, indeed.
It's British television. Cashman.
Yeah, shorter even than Black Books.
Yeah.
How many seasons in is Black Books?
3.
Damn. Mm. How many episodes? Yeah.
18 in total.
That's 6 per season.
6 per season.
6 per season. The classic.
The calculator strikes again.
And that voice that you're hearing over there, long time listeners to this show will be aware. It's Aidan Jones.
Yes, the T Brickford crossover.
He's back. He's blagged his way onto the pod.
On 25 days, we call me T Brickford because the first year that we did it, they were all like, and who's this? And I was just saying insane names every time. And the funniest one was T Brickford,
and introduced himself as T Brickford.
T Brickford's blagged his way onto the pod.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So fans of 25 days will love that.
Was that like initial T, or was that like T-A Brickford?
T dot Brickford.
Yeah. T dot Brickford. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did you make that? So that's an interesting face that you're making when you say that, Peter.
I was kind of like,
just explain that to me.
I was sort of like a, I don't know. I don't know what it means.
It's a shame the listeners are really missing out on Pete's faces.
It's sort of like a, it's a, yeah, I don't know.
It's probably the right face.
Yeah. It's a perfect face. If you can see
kind of facial yeesh.
Yeah. If the face was a noise, it'd be like, ugh.
Yeah.
Facial yeesh.
Yeah. Luckily for us, the face isn't a noise. It's a face.
Ooh. This guy's got a yeesh infection. Look at his face.
Ooh. Ay, ay, ay.
Wee-ee-ee.
Oop-dee-doop-dee.
But yes, no, it's I'm Alan Partridge. It's it's Alan Wideshut. That's the name of the episode. I actually remembered it this time.
Had you, Aidan Jones, never seen any episodes of
I had seen not even a full episode, but I'd seen the clips of Cockpiss Partridge, which is like episode 1.
Yeah.
And I have a friend in London who, when we used to work together, would always say, scum, subhuman scum.
Right. Yeah.
And so that's my knowledge of the show.
But enough about your performance review.
Yeah.
Can I say, I've been doing a show. There's a lot of D&D panel shows running during the Fringe. I am doing one, and I'm playing a character. And the character's name that I have chosen is Jethro, in tribute of the West Country instead of comedian Jethro from the previous episode.
Amazing. Are you doing the West Country accent?
I'm not doing the West Country accent because
I can't believe we're in a dungeon again. Next, you're going to be telling me there's a bloody dragon.
I mean, that would be perfect. Get you on the show.
Yeah.
Get me off these panels. I'm just doing this voice.
Are you doing that every day?
No, I've done a couple.
Okay.
For Fringe.
You come in and it's like a campaign that ongoing through the Fringe and you just
jump in?
Yeah, it's
ongoing campaign through the Fringe and they bring in 3 different adventures for the next chapter.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
What time is it?
8 p.m.
I can't go to that. I've got a different show. Strike it from the record.
Yeah, I struggle. I struggle with D&D.
Yeah, you don't like it?
I just kind of sound. I'm just like, that's not
real.
Oh,
it's so cool.
That's so funny.
I think it's really cool and fun.
It's the whole thing of just like rolling a dice and like the whole just like the sheer elaborateness of like, well, I've got a coat that turns the wearer gay, so I'm gonna throw that at the bear.
I think you find all coats turn their wearer gay.
Well, in Newcastle, that's certainly true. Yeah, you wouldn't be caught dead wearing a coat. That's actually how you come out in Newcastle. Is you're seen
you chuck a coat on,
wearing
and then
a coat.
Your mother comes up and hugs you tearfully and says, "We knew, we always knew."
Is this actually true of the people of Newcastle, where they will just brave the weather?
They're known for like not wearing.
Because when I was in Newcastle, I'm like, it is weird. I'm one of the only people walking around with an umbrella in this torrential rain.
Right, that they just wear like
they're
t-shirts.
It's like especially on like a night out. Like people are known for like the men will go out in like t-shirts and the women will go out in like short dresses and heels, even when it's 0 degrees.
Yeah, right.
I've heard that about Glasgow as well. In Glasgow, they're like, if you have an umbrella, you're just a weak dog. And they just walk around in the street, just copping rain to the face. Yeah,
the only people I saw with umbrellas was myself and women.
Yeah.
It was wild. Because I did think, I'm like, is this like a a masculinity thing? Is that what's
guys
happening?
Guys are like, what's your pronouns, love? I'm trying to be respectful, like, you know. Yeah. You're carrying an umbrella, you're clearly transitioning. I'm willing to be. You're not very far along, like, but I can see you're making the effort. So
that's quite gonna, a good one. That's a hard accent to pull off.
It is. It's complex. Yeah. Why are we talking about that?
Alan Partridge, Cockpit Partridge.
How did we get to
Coates?
Coates that make your dad gay, D&D, Jethro.
Oh, D&D. We are back. And we're back. Yeah, so we open with the radio show.
The radio show.
Where it opens with a woman describing, she's like, we'll just be like super beings. And Alan's like, we're talking about what people will be like in a billion years time.
Man, I going on from the fact that I hadn't seen it, it is such a punchy show. Like, it's really laugh a minute, the gags, you know. Yeah. I don't know why I thought it would be otherwise, but yeah, I mean, interestingly, like, UK comedy is so much punchier than American comedy, or maybe American comedy, the jokes are just bad. But yeah,
you mean sitcoms?
Sitcoms, sorry, yes, that's fuck. Yeah, I don't know. I was surprised at how thick and fast the jokes came and how funny most of them were.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is like a prodigiously good UK comedy. There are bad ones, but I don't know. There is a lot of, I don't know. I find stuff like Modern Family just like unwatchable.
Yeah, it's almost like like compulsive joke writing. You know, it's like, there needs to be a joke here. Even this doesn't matter if it's a good one. It just needs to be a joke.
It's like, and the joke with this character is he's gay and annoying, and that's going to be the same in every episode. And it's like, I know, he's wearing a coat. There's no need to ram it down my throat. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, it's very punchy. I mean, I guess laugh a minute is not necessarily a great compliment.
Yeah, so 22 laughs in the, or 29.
I mean, that's still quite a lot of laughs. But yeah, probably more at some points. There's just, yeah, I don't know. It's just really fast paced and good.
Where you're like, I so rarely laugh out loud when watching anything.
Mate, same.
I watched it with a friend of the pod, Ty Gray. I don't know. He probably hasn't been on this pod, actually.
No, he's not been on this
friend pod. Friend of two of the members of the pod. Yeah. And known accomplice.
And he's on the front of the 50 Shades of Grey books.
He's the Grey.
He's one of the 50.
Gray.
50 Shades of... Why doesn't he call the show 50 Shades of Ty Gray?
He totally should. Yeah. Oh, but he's doing teacher shows.
Yeah, but he can switch it up. Still early in the guide.
Yeah. That's true.
Anyway, what were you saying?
I watched it with Ty. And so, you know, you have a second person there. So I laughed. Out loud.
Yeah.
At various times. It was great. Great watch.
You know something's great when you laugh out loud on your own.
Yeah.
The rare occasion where something tips you over the edge. Doesn't happen often. Mm-hmm. But doesn't happen often. Doesn't happen, but occasionally. Just occasionally. So they have this, and she says like, oh, well, I think, you know, we'll just have bigger hands, eyes, and sex organs. Which is great. And then he's like, well, I don't know what that would look like. And she's like, licking the back of a spoon.
Oh, yeah. Phenomenal joke.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to... It takes some doing.
Yes.
And then we get a scene, I think, at the caravan. Do we cut straight to the caravan?
Great question.
I actually can't remember the order of things in this episode. I barely remember much of what happened.
Oh, yeah. We get Dave Clifton teasing about how his book's going to be pulped.
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
One of the three lines is the pulping of the book.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's not sold enough copies.
And he gives them to, or maybe that's a bit later, he gives them to the guys that are redecorating his caravan. He gives them two copies each, one wrapped and one unwrapped.
No, he doesn't give them the unwrapped one.
Oh, doesn't he? Oh, he just has them in his hands.
This is very obvious that that's what they are. Because Dave Clifton, there's something about Dave Clifton is like reading one of these like true crime novels.
Yeah.
Like, it's called Bad Slags.
Yeah, that's right. That he hates all these British true crime. Yeah. You know.
So people would rather read a book by Stan the Stabber or Dan the Dagger Man from Dagenham than a good book about someone bouncing back. Want to read it goes off on this rant where he's like, you know, people want to read about someone who's, you know, handcuffing someone to a car that's been clamped and they have to phone the council to get released, except they can't because they've shoved your mobile phone up your backside, all because they couldn't pay back a loan at a very uncompetitive interest rate. Yeah, I like that Alan's a Law and Order guy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very British, right?
Kind of, but also not. Well,
what is
know.
This character? Is he like some kind of British spin-off stereotype or like an exaggeration of Britishness? Or is he supposed to be... I guess it's kind of like a David Brent character almost.
Yeah.
He thinks that he has all this dignity, but actually he is absurd.
Yeah, he's supposed to be this like very particular type of guy that like you always... I think if you're from this country, you know at least one person who is Alan Partridge. And if you don't know someone, it is you.
It is you, yeah.
Yeah. And like I think they said he was quite heavily based on Richard Madeley.
Don't know who that is.
He's like a... he's a daytime TV presenter. Him and his wife have a show, or they used to have a show called Richard and Judy. And she is like substantially older than him.
Right.
Like really like, especially now, because he's like probably in his like mid-50s or something. And she is like an old lady.
Uh-huh.
And they're like husband and wife. And he just has this like amazing, there's a clip of him you can watch online where he's like presenting like Good Morning Britain or something. He's talking about Shamima Begum. And he goes, And he's like, well, we're having a lot of calls about Shamima Begum, obviously. And he's like, and you know, at the end of World War II, we put a lot of the Nazis on trial and we executed a lot of them for their crimes. But we never went after the Hitler Youth, did we? Just something to think about.
That's on the real show?
Yeah. That's real.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Richard, he fucking rules. And he also has this amazing thing where he'll like, much like Alan Partridge, he's often wrong, but he's also often right. But he'll just be right in like an insane way. Kind of like the Shamima Begum thing. The fundamental point he's making is reasonable, but he's making it in an insane way.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And so, yeah, Partridge, I feel like, is kind of, he's a satire of like the media as much as anything else.
Okay. And his story is he bouncing back from something that's happened in the series, or is he bouncing back? Is his character someone who's
he's
fallen?
He's bouncing back from something that happened in between the two series.
Oh, what happened in between the two series?
He ate too much Toblerone, went crazy.
Yeah, he got. Really
oh, that's
fat.
What
he
those flashbacks were.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was all fat.
He was all fat.
Yeah, that's really funny.
But it's also from like, so
it's before... funny that he's fat.
Yeah.
How dumb am I?
Before this thing, I'm Alan Partridge, these two seasons, there was another show that predates it called Knowing Me, Knowing You with Alan Partridge, where he's like a talk show host on TV, which is what they're referencing when they say he was on
TV. Right, right.
And then it gets cancelled at the end of the season because he... he shoots a man to death on live TV by accident because he thinks the gun isn't loaded. Which is such a funny thing to end your career, like the Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, yeah, that's the name that I was digging for.
Yeah.
Premonition.
Darren Brown did that. Well, actually, he got someone to shoot a gun at him.
He
knew it wouldn't be loaded.
Is he a magician?
He's a mentalist.
Yeah, right.
He's a mentalist.
He's a mantler.
It's fucking nuts. I find the word mentalist is so funny to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in Ireland, I don't know if that carried across and that was the accent that I was doing, but a mentaler is like a crazy, like you'd say if someone loves to drink and they go crazy, they're a mentaler, you know, which is very close to the word mentalist. And that's funny.
Mentaler than you.
And he's fat.
Well, that is a mentalist in the UK.
And he's fat. You've met... Oh, God, what's his name? Who runs GMB Comedy in London?
Yeah.
Kyle, the Scottish man, did, because he's a magician.
I thought that was going to be like a wrestler name, like Kyle, the Scottish man. McLean, or whatever.
Dooley. Can't remember his last name, but he used to wear a waistcoat, fascinatingly.
Interesting.
He was a magician, and he did a bit where...
That's very magician-coded, actually, to wear a waistcoat.
Yes. He's also a gay man, actually. So there's the coat part.
Yeah. Does that count?
Waistcoat.
I'm wearing a waistcoat, but there's nothing over the top of it. So I think we can agree that's right.
He had a bit where he had three cups, and under one of the cups was a very, like a spike that you would spike receipts on if you're working in a cafe.
Yeah.
And everyone in the audience saw where the spike went, but he didn't. And then he'd pull someone from the audience and cold read them to know where the spike was, and to show his confidence, he would smash the paper cup down and it wouldn't be on the spike. And one night he smashed it and he got it wrong and the spike went through his hand, and it was in a railway arch in East London. And he held the spike up with it going through his hand and said, "Everyone, take photos, because if you don't, you will never forgive yourself. The ambulance is on the way."
That is unreal.
That's
yeah,
crazy.
That's what they say about magicians.
And he runs GMB.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I
mean, put their body on the line.
Yeah, man.
Did you still make him give donations on the way out?
I mean, you probably would, hey?
Yeah.
Jesus.
I'm off in the ambulance, but can you just put your money in the bucket
What
there?
Was the noise in the room when he hit the spike?
I wish I was there.
I've oh, pissed my there? Head on a there. Spike. Oh. Well, I was...
It happened while I was living in London, but yeah, I wasn't there that week.
Yeah, he's just like throwing up while he's doing this.
Yeah, I've thrown them in the bucket.
Some of these people have come from Stoke. Yeah, brutal scenes. But we get the scene where he's like, yeah, the house is being finished. Sonia is apparently she wasn't living in the caravan, which wasn't clear before, but it seems she's been living in a flat, and there's some question as to where she's gonna be living next. Mm-hmm. Alan goes to bid farewell to the builders. He gives them copies of his book wrapped up, and he's like, I'm not gonna tell you what it is, but he's also carrying unwrapped copies of the book, which makes it incredibly obvious.
Yes.
And he's like, I presume we'll all keep in touch.
Yeah. That's so funny. The absurdity.
Yeah. And then we get a very dark moment where they're like, Lynn's like, have you decided what bedroom's going to be yours? And he's like, oh, just the first one on the left. And he's like, that's the box room. It's like, and he's like, yeah, great. Just squeeze double bed in there and I'll just spring straight onto the bed. She's like, where will you keep stuff? And he's like, oh, you know, down the corridor. It's only a short naked jog. So what about if you've got guests? And he's like, well, I'll cup myself. And it's like, yeah, this is a portrait of a truly mentally ill man.
So this is his girlfriend?
So Sonia is the Ukrainian one. She's his girlfriend.
Okay, yeah.
And then Lynn is like his PA.
All right, yeah.
But who's sort of secretly in love with him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And Sonia, his girlfriend. Yeah, and that's who, and she's like expecting to live in the caravan with him. And he was like, no, you can sleep down there and you can pay me rent and all this kind of stuff. What does he want, this Alan Partridge?
He wants a TV show. He wants to be respected.
He wants to be respected, yeah. And he's not really that worried about like the woman who... You know, or his PA, and then this other woman who is like with him. He doesn't seem that bothered by that. He doesn't seem to be like, fuck yeah.
That you know? He has a PA?
That he has a PA and that he has this woman who loves him. Or,
yeah, I think know. With him, he kind of just assumes that he should.
Right. He's like, of course this woman loves me, and so I will pay her no regard.
Yeah.
And treat her like shit in this weird way.
He cares so much about what everybody else thinks about him, except for the people who actually do care about him.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really care what they think about him.
Yes.
So, like, Sonia actually really likes him, and he is embarrassed that she likes him and wants, like, is trying to impress, like, the builders and cares more about what the builders think of him than what Sonia does. So, we'll, you know, send her away and get rid of, like, oh, get, you know,
do that sort
of stuff.
Mm. And this has become one of those podcasts that's called like, and we were like, it's like, yeah, it's so true. He cares so much about what people think of him, but just like not the people who actually care about him.
Yeah. Well, so, it's just
and that's why he's not texting you back.
Yeah. Alan Partridge would never text you back.
Yeah. No. Unless.
But he's like double texting everyone else.
Yeah. He texts everybody else.
Yeah. Mm. But if you liked him. I wonder what would happen if that lady decided that she didn't like him and left him. He'd probably pursue her.
Maybe
he'd be call her a slut and a bitch. And
I don't think he would. No, he wouldn't say slut or bitch.
No, slag.
He would. There's only the only people would. It would only be who's Clifton? Is it the radio dude? Who's
Yeah, Dave Clifton.
That's the only guy he'd call a slut and a bitch.
Yeah, and he does every day.
He'd call him a slut and a bitch every day if he could.
Yeah. There's a great one in a previous episode where he's like, oh, I'm actually seeing a friend this weekend, Alan. And he's like, oh, is it Jack Daniel or Johnny Walker? Glenn Morangi. which one is it? Yeah, he loves slagging him.
He's very mean and bitter, isn't he?
Yeah. Over the season, we've had an interesting, you know, him and Clifton have gone a few rounds and we've really had a period. In the first season, Clifton was kind of coming out on top, but then Alan got the better slot on the radio show. And then in the second season, kind of Alan's been coming out on top. But then just towards the end, Clifton started coming back.
Yeah.
He's asking questions that Alan can't answer.
Oh, yes. Like what? What does he ask?
I mean, kind of like a sporting sense.
Yes, okay.
He's not ready.
He's come back into the game. He's in ascendancy.
Yeah, he is in ascendancy. Yeah, and maybe if there were a third season, their shows would be swapped around again. Who knows?
Yeah.
Should we...
I wish I'd remembered more of this. I keep going, actually. I remember a few things, but I don't want to ruin the chronology.
Okay, yeah. So then, get this thing about the house. Alan goes down to the petrol station to talk to Michael. And this is where we have this fun throwaway thing about how Michael has slept with a 60-year-old woman.
Oh, yes.
And he introduced this by saying, I had full sex with a woman.
Full sex.
Full sex. And then he's like, and he reveals that he met her in a pub car park and she said, oh, I'm too drunk to drive. Can you drive me home to Cardiff? So he drove her to Cardiff and he's
from
like,
Norwich.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, and I just came back this morning on the coach. He's like, you know, it's kind of like an SAS secret mission, right? You know, like gun till Cardiff, have full sex with a woman and then come back on the coach. And he reveals that this woman was 60 years old. And he's like, yeah, it was like Bravo 2-0, man. And then he goes, well, in your case, well, like Bravo 6-0 by Randy McNabb.
Yes, Randy McNabb. Rand McNally make the Globes. What's Rand McNabb?
That's Andy McNabb.
Andy McNabb.
He's a guy who used to be in the SAS who writes books, such as good. Bravo 2-0, which actually McNabb. Improves with every read. yeah, but I think we've talked about this in a previous episode, but Bravo 2-0, because Alan Partridge brings it up a lot, is it's a memoir about the first Gulf War and the Andy McNabb was on this SAS patrol where he was the only survivor, where they were like hundreds of miles behind enemy lines and they got cut off and he like walked back to like the UK-US lines. And so it's this kind of like crazy like military history story,
and
whatever.
And Partridge is inspired by that?
Partridge is, well, I think he's like a type of British dad who like dreams of being like an army guy.
Yes. Know?
In the most abstract way. He doesn't dream of actually doing any of it, but of having the cachet.
Just wants the honor.
Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah.
The respect.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which, you know, don't we all?
Oh, yes.
Wouldn't we all like to steal some valor?
We all can.
I want, I want free McDonald's.
Do you get free McDonald's? What you get?
I think so, right?
If you're a cop or if you're in the army?
No, if you're in the army. In America?
Oh, you know, the Legion d'honneur de Ronald McDonald. Yeah. The big clown ribbon.
I feel like I've heard that. Maybe it's not McDonald's. Maybe it's something else like Burger King or something. But I swear.
Brutal if it's Burger King.
Is
it? Doing a full tour of duty and all you get is free Burger King.
In Australia, Hungry Jack's is the best one.
Really?
That's what I think.
That's a crazy opinion.
Hungry Jack's rules. The burgers are literally better at Hungry Jack's.
You say in Australia it's the best one as though the burgers aren't kind of the same everywhere.
No. Well, I mean, maybe that, you know, but...
It can be good.
It's phenomenal.
I will say this. Food. Some of them are good.
The Ultimate Double Whopper.
Some of the restaurants will be good. Some of the restaurants will be poor.
Well, yeah, me, I mean, there's obviously variance in any data set, but...
I find Burger King, you taste it the rest of the day. You have a Burger King and it just...
Yeah, that's why you have it to go nine eyes.
Burger King bed.
That'll shit put you to sleep, man.
McDonald's, you eat it, you forget about it. It's fire and forget.
Set and forget
Burger
stuff.
King, you do not forget about it.
Yeah.
And it's hours big. Later, you'll be like, oh, I had a Burger King.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And it's big. I like that it's big. Yeah. It'll fucking knock you out, man. It's
a big fat chunk of onion.
Yeah, they do have a big fat chunk of onions, don't they?
Yeah,
yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's an antidote to this hellish experience that we call life.
You don't enjoy life.
I love life. You should do the
ads for Burger King, antidote to the hellish experience that we call life. Numb yourselves with me.
Anesthetize your mind.
The Burger King. Join with me in these onion rings and forget your woes.
It's been wearing a black hood, dripping blood all over my face.
I offer you solace. If you accept me as your one true king, I offer you burger. I offer you chip. I offer you onion ring.
That would be a sick ad. I think that would shift a lot of units.
I offer you safety from the clown and his Hamburglar. Yeah. That's such a bad job, being the Hamburglar.
The Hamburglar.
Like, because it's implying that you're a burglar, but you say your sights so low.
The Hamburglar, much more sinister back in the days when they still had, like, Mayor McCheese. And the Big Mac Chief of Police, when they used to have the whole hamburger city.
Big Mac Chief of Police. Is he included in ANCAP?
All caps are bastards, except for that one. Some all caps are Big Macs. ACAB.
They had a whole city.
There was a whole, like, there was all, they were burger people. So Mayor McCheese is a man with a burger head.
And his name is Man McCheese.
Mayor McCheese. I can't remember what the name of the Big Mac chief of police is, but he is a chief of police who has a Big Mac for a head. And they were
but
all
he has,
like,
a human body.
He has a human body. But
so we're positing these instances of a kind of horrifying hybrid people.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, my dad was a Big Mac. My mum was a lady.
Interesting that he's called the Big Mac Chief of Police rather than the Chief of the Big Mac Police. Implying-
well, I actually am not sure what his actual title is. I'm going to look him up right now. Big Mac Chief of Police.
But if
Chief people say to me, Mac...
if he was the Chief of the Big Mac Police, that would mean that all the police are Big Macs. But he's the Big Mac Chief of Police, implying that the police are all normal.
My
and he's
apologies,
one with the Big Mac.
He's not the Chief.
Oh, what is he? The Deputy.
Officer Big Mac.
Officer Big Mac.
Officer Big Mac. Wow. Why is he wearing like a ninja outfit?
He's got a little police dress on.
Yeah, he's wearing like the Ronald McDonald clown boots, but he's in the police.
And then to give you an idea of Mayor McCheese, he is...
just give people an idea. If you just turn to page 42 of your handouts, you'll see a
we'll
diagram
get
of Mayor
the kind of
McCheese.
Aesthetic that we are working with. Okay. Oh, yeah, he's got the mayoral sash.
What era is this? These look like lithographs practically.
How old are you? Yeah, MC Escher has done a lot of these printed onto liner.
Yeah, you can't tell which way up the Big Mac is. That's what's crazy about it.
It would have been the 80s.
Yeah, wow, right.
Okay. I was going to be like, yeah, I don't remember
this. This is what the deal was.
Yeah, I remember having, specifically, I had two toys.
Yeah.
I had toys of Mayor McCheese and Officer Big Mac.
Now, tell me this. When you, because you're what? What are you, 40?
41.
41. You're 8 years older than me.
Yeah. You're
41?
Thank you.
No way. No way.
When... I'm 8 years older than you?
Yeah.
You're a child.
I'm a child. I'm a little baby boy. Goo goo gaga. Yeah. When I was a kid,
yeah,
the Macca's toys were all movie tie-ins. We're talking Flubber. We're talking Lion King.
Yeah.
We're talking, I can't remember any other movies from when it was a Toy Story.
Yeah.
Was that the deal when you were a kid, or was there a different kind of in vogue type of thing?
No, we had DuckTales was in the Happy Meals.
Is that a TV show?
DuckTales a TV show.
Muppet Ducks.
Muppet Babies.
Oh, yeah.
It was a TV show.
Muppet Babies.
Yep, I remember them. Oh, I think we had Looney Tunes ones.
Right, okay.
Sure.
So these are just more general things rather than like moment specific, this movie's out.
Yeah.
This year.
No, these were separate toys. I don't think they would have been the... Happy Meal toys. I don't know why. I just remember having them all through my childhood. Still probably have them somewhere.
Yeah.
But Batman Returns is a famous movie tie-in.
We had
he's assisted by Commissioner Big Mac.
Yes, of course.
The man with the Big Mac for
Commissioner
Big
he's Mac. Finally got a promotion.
And Commissioner Big Mac at the end of the movie says he's not the hero that
you
we
see,
Batman, want.
Batman, Commissioner Big Mac is afraid that people are going to eat his head. Because the people are hungry, Batman.
It's getting a bit Trump.
Okay, the people. People are hungry. They're hungry. They want to gnaw on the mayor's head. Mayor McCheese has got a delicious head. Okay. A beautiful head. You remember Mayor McCheese from the movie Silence of the Lamb.
So the hamburger is much more sinister in this world where there are men who are and humans
who are doing
people
things.
Who are walking around who are burgers.
Oh, and he's
so
going
like
to burger their hands
them.
Because these their head. That's their head. So
their
he's
heads.
Taking their heads.
He's taking their heads.
Yeah,
there were kids. There was kids.
Yeah. Echoes of the French Revolution here.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, Marie Antoinette.
And the king.
And yes, the king. Louis.
Wow. So this is now turning into like QAnon where we're like, yeah, so really Ronald McDonald was trying to tell us the whole time that there was a cabal of pedophiles led by the Hamburglar. Yeah.
What did we learn today? The Scottish word for pedophile is...
Beast,
which is the title of good friend Jordan Barr's show.
She only found out when she spoke to a Scot here.
And that's why he's called Mr. Beast.
My joke was I'm going to go get a burger down at the P-Eater file. there's a restaurant in Melbourne called B-East.
B-East.
The paedophile.
Why do they call it a beast? That's so... I've never heard that before either.
Neither have I.
No. I'm from this country.
Well, that's what she was like. There's been no Scottish people in my show.
He's a beast.
I mean, that's good. Maybe we should all just call our shows beasts.
It sounds like you're saying that he's like a really good paedophile that you admire.
He's a beast.
No one molests like him.
And nor should they.
Yeah. He's got a long wheelbase van because of how many kids he has to pick up on his round.
He's so good at it.
He's had to get a bus driver's license.
You talk in the most specific way. he's got a third axle on the van. He needs a HR to drive that thing down the freeway.
He's not got the regular sprinter. He's got the long wheelbase sprinter that you normally only see long distance couriers have. You know, it's impractical in the city. You can't parallel park it. Sorry, you were going to ask something, Pete.
Was I going to ask something? I think I was still talking about the hamburger lip.
Okay, fine.
But because then we were Hungry Jack's.
Prefer Hungry Jack's. They do lack the rich world building aesthetic of McDonald's. That is true. You know,
we don't have the king in Australia because we don't have the.
Is there a king?
There is a king. There is a Burger King in the States. They have a Burger King.
Whoa.
The other thing that's happening in the episode, Lynn's getting baptized.
Lynn is getting baptized.
So silly.
Yeah, and Alan's going to be there. We get a great line where he says, "Splashdown for Lynn is at 1,500 hours on Sunday."
That was that event at the end of it when he's talking to the Christian people.
Yeah.
He's trying to be Catholic because he wants to get on the radio show.
Yeah, that's or right. just like CV, I guess.
Yeah.
We get this interview with him on the radio in between where it's him and another author.
That's the highlight for me, right? Of the episode. Yeah. That's the big like moment.
Great, great little cameo from Rebecca Front here.
I don't know who that is.
Well, we've seen the back of her now. she's one of those like British comedic actresses who just turns up in a lot of things.
Yes,
she
was in, what would
she
you
was
have seen
like
her
in? Had a lead role in The Thick of It.
Okay.
In like two seasons of The Thick of It, she was like a main character. But she's also been in like a load of other stuff with Steve Coogan. Like she crops up in like The Day to Day and Knowing Me, Knowing You. She's in that as well. She's kinda...
Do we, here's my question. Do we like Alan Partridge, the character? Do we want him to have some degree of success or comfort or happiness? Because he is so mean to this woman. And it's so funny, like when he just keeps going back to her injecting drugs.
He's when he is mean, it is fun because he does just eat shit the rest of his entire existence.
Yeah, right.
So like sometimes he does get one, like he does get to be finally say how he really feels. Every so often, he will say what he really feels about the situation, really kind of kick a boot in.
Right. But in that way, like in that situation, when he's saying how he really feels, he's not really saying how, he's just showing everyone how bitter and, you know, sad he is.
Which he usually avoids doing.
Right.
He usually tries to hide it.
That's a real.
Sort of root for him, yeah.
It's a real, failure, like an ignominy in that interview for him, you know? Like it feels like a catastrophic failure.
Mm.
Yeah, there's this other woman who's like written a book about her recovery from being a drug addict, and then she's like picking apart Alan's book and he gets very defensive.
Yes.
She talks about how often he says, "Needless to say, I had the last laugh," and he's like, "Well, you'd probably say needles to say I took drugs."
Which is so petty and just like also interestingly.
So funny though. It's real Hate and Live stuff.
Yes. Needless to say would crush at Hate and Live.
Yeah.
Needless to say.
Was that Carl Legacy?
Yeah, it was. It wasn't a good words for the Liverpudlian accent, was it? The interviewer at the end of the interview still seems to like him. Like she hasn't clocked how much of a psycho he is. She's just like, "Well, that was a bit interesting, wasn't it?" And it's like, the man in front of you is a sociopath.
Yeah. It is really fun just like... sometimes just being really rude to someone in an interview. I feel like being rude is a real treat for me.
Yeah.
Like I so rarely do it. I find it to be like, and I cannot understand it when other people are rude. I find it so difficult. But just occasionally when someone else crosses the line and then you're like, now I can be rude to you.
Yes.
And it's such a like a weight has been lifted. Like, just when someone's pissed you off and you're like, and now I can open up the taps.
I understand. I don't have the stomach for that kind of... I understand what you're saying, and I understand that feeling for me as being like, I think when I ride my bike and I see someone do the wrong thing on the road and it endangers me,
yeah,
that's my moment where I'm not rude to them. I just scream at them.
Yeah.
Which is...
It's not rude.
Screaming is a form of self-expression. It feels like rude is not
the
right
word. What do you say?
Oh, just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Or the, and you know what? Maybe I won't scream, but I'll just look and be like, what the fuck? You know, something like that. But yeah. Oh, the tap opens. I let it out in that moment. Like on my ride home from work in Melbourne, there's a spot, a bike path with all these spots where the bike path has right away across the road.
Yeah.
And the cars sometimes will not stop. And I'll have to skid, and sometimes it's been raining and I've skidded to a stop and the car's there and I realize that they just didn't see the signs or whatever, but I'll like throw my bike down and be like, what the, and go up to the window and knock on the window and be like, what the fuck is wrong with you, man?
Knocking on the window. That's real.
Yeah. Because that's my moment to be like, here's all the bad shit that's happened to me in the last 2 weeks, and now I get to fucking magnifying glass on the ant at you, motherfucker.
You're just there dripping wet.
Yeah.
Looking like a really low budget Al-Qaeda operative.
like a Newcastle man on a night out.
We're gonna send you to ride these push bikes really hard into the tallest building in Melbourne. We're gonna hope for the best. Yeah, so yeah, we get the scene where Lynn is baptized. We don't get to see her actually get baptized, but yeah, we get this fun aside.
Which is a shame because I grew up Baptist.
Right.
So yeah. My dad was an elder at our church, and I've seen him baptize people. So I was really excited to see, oh, they're going to go to the backyard pool. They're going to do the dip. Everybody dressed in white. You do your thing. You get baptized, lowered in the pool. I spent a lot of time surrounding a pool as people my parents knew would be dipped in to be baptized. It's a very interesting experience.
What do you reckon about, this might be a bit inside baseball, but you know, fucking we're at the ballpark. Hugh Robertson.
Was very Partridge.
From Melbourne. We're at the ballpark. Hugh Robertson, Melbourne comedian, very successful online, silly kind of funny videos. And then all of a sudden converted to Christianity and did you see he got baptized in the ocean?
Yeah. But that's like
like the world's biggest pool.
It is.
The Pacific Ocean.
Evangelical, though. That's like evangelical new wave sort of.
That is. That kind of vibe.
Yeah. Like you have a look at the t-shirts. They've got the logos of their church all over those t-shirts. Yeah. They're dunking him in.
Yeah.
The church having merch is quite funny.
Yeah. The church having merch.
The church has already got like the most merch. Like they've got the big icons, you know?
Your
crosses. You don't need any extra. You can't have your own extra logo for your church.
Yeah, that's true.
And you can't be selling it.
The Lord, isn't idolatry a fucking one of the 10, you know?
No,
there's 7 deadly sins. There's 10 commandments.
Of all the things I expected to hear today on this podcast from you, isn't idolatry one of the... No, correct me if I'm wrong about idolatry, but I believe
is that one of the top 10?
Yeah.
One of David Letterman's top 10.
Top 10 commandments.
Top 10 commandments.
Idolatry. Like
the religious Joe Rogan experience.
The Joe Rogan religious experience.
Let me tell you, man, everyone's talking about idolatry, but it's you know, the Mayans had idolatry thousands of years before. Yeah.
You want to see idolatry? See this bear rip a guy's head off.
That's right.
Yeah.
We get a fun little comment from Alan where he's like, well, she didn't like going in that water, did she? She was thrashing around. It's fun. I like the idea of someone getting baptized and just like physically resisting the process.
Yeah.
Do you know what? That's such a great example of like the joke writing where you don't see the action, but you have a great image of the thing.
Yeah.
And the fun of the joke is imagining what it would look like for someone to be baptized and like what thrashing around looks like in that context. It's such great writing.
Yeah. What about a guy who's like, he gets like tortured at a CIA black site with a huge amount of waterboarding. And then in the course of this, he has a sort of like an epiphany or a revelation that he should become a born again Christian. But as a result of that, in a sort of by a Curb Your Enthusiasm series of events, he has to be baptized.
And then, you know, is cast back into it. I can't remember which Stuart Lee special it is, but there's one special where he says some joke that's a visual image like that. And then you know, goes to the audience, like, see those guys, they're laughing over there. They've gone, oh, I wonder what that would look like. And they've imagined that and they've had some extra laughs for free. And then these people over here, they've gone, oh, he's stopped talking now. I wonder when he'll start talking again.
Yeah.
And that, like, commentary from him helped me understand the mechanic of that kind of joke.
Yeah. Also at the baptism, Rob Brydon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Did see that.
Finally.
Yeah. Love a bit of Rob Brydon.
12 episodes for him to pop up at some point.
Rob Brydon in the most man indicted in BBC paedophilia scandal outfit you've ever seen.
A Hugh Edwards, if I ever saw one.
God, yeah. Well, I guess actually Hugh Edwards is very normal looking by the standards of.
But I mean, he's been indicted in a BBC paedophilia scandal.
He has.
I was speaking of whatever his fucking name is, the actor. I watched Gavin and Stacey very recently.
Rob Brydon.
Rob Brydon. What a wonderful show. What a great wonderful series. Actor Rob Brydon is.
He's great.
Yep.
Yeah, he's very good in that show. Yeah.
What a time before James Corden was James Corden.
Yes.
Beautiful time.
Yeah.
More innocent time.
Yeah, when he was just like an exciting and hilariously fat man.
Yeah. It's... I find this a really funny thing when you just kind of like, it's kind of like, you know, in algebra where you get like simultaneous equations or something, and you just by connecting various different data points, you learn something new, which is that when James Corden and Ruth Jones were doing Gavin and Stacey, everyone thought James Corden was a funny guy. But then because he left and tried to do funny things on his own, we were like, oh no, Ruth Jones was funny.
Yeah.
And you were just there.
Yeah.
You were just saying things that she had thought of.
Uh-huh.
And if he just kept collaborating with her, he would have just been like, this James Corden guy is funny.
Yes. He flew too close to the sun. Icarian.
Mm-hmm. I know. Flew too far away from Ruth Jones.
Yes.
Yes. That's what he didn't. Yeah. Pete's sister.
My sister
and
Ruth
my
Jones,
sister also,
because we both have the surname Jones.
I'm outnumbered by Jones.
Many people's great fantasy to be outnumbered by Joneses,
especially in Wales.
Yeah, well, especially being
Joneses,
keeping up with them.
Oh yes,
yeah,
lush, absolutely lush.
That's absolutely lush. That is. Love keeping up with the Joneses. But yeah, so. At the baptism, Rob Brydon comes up to him and he says, oh, I read a big fan of TV show. He's like, thanks. And he goes, I read your book, wasn't for me. And he goes, fuck off. And then we get this thing where he keeps coming over and apologizing. And then the guy says something else about his book and he's like, fuck off. And he's like, I don't think anecdotes are for you on the final one. And he's like, what do you mean anecdotes aren't for me? He's like, in 1975, I was getting a train from Crewe to London. It was full. There was one seat left. I've narrowly beat another man to the seat. I looked up. It was Peter Purvis. He was at the height of his Blue Peter fame. He said, you jammy bastard. And I said, don't be blue, Peter. Needless to say, I had the last laugh. Now, fuck off.
That guy complimenting him and then apologizing profusely several times. I had that experience two nights ago at the Three Sisters. Nothing to do with comedy. I was sitting with some friends watching some Olympics, and some drunk fucking idiot, the species of which is only to be found at the Three Sisters after a certain hour, for no reason, just on the chair behind me, just touched my fucking head. And I turned around. It was like it was a friend, like, touching my head. And I turned around and thought it was a friend. It was like, this no one. Mm. And I was like, what? What? And he was like, oh, sorry, man. Sorry. And I was like, whatever. And then for the next few minutes, he kept tapping me on the shoulder to be like, I feel so bad, man. I'm really sorry. I was just like, fuck off. Get away from me. So, yeah, I'm sure that's how he felt in the show as well.
He was just desperate to touch your head.
Yeah.
That's what he wanted.
I can see why. Now that you've mentioned it, I'm like,
but you can touch it. You're my mate. You know,
that's true.
You can touch it whenever you need.
I don't.
Well, that hurts. That's upsetting.
Out of respect for you.
Now it's not upsetting anymore. How have you done that? I wonder if there will be another reversal.
There won't be. Out of respect for how disappointed you must feel about your current state of your head.
Being as it is, marvelous.
Leap old.
Yeah. Yeah, Aiden's head has a uniform texture, whereas Pete's head has like a two texture, like on like a Domino's half and half.
Half and half scarf of heads, or like one of those signs that you it looks different from different angles.
Well, like a cup final. It's hair versus bald at Wembley Stadium. Who's gonna win
every year since 2014? Yeah, or whenever you went bald.
Sponsored by Finasteride.
Even.
Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Bron. Yeah.
Bron's not going to kill herself.
That's the spirit.
Bron Cast, ladies and gentlemen, still alive. Even if this podcast comes out in 2-3 weeks' time, I'm confidently saying Bron Cast very much in this realm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. But you know, on a more serious note, you know, you can always kill yourself. It's not, you know, it's, you if ever things are looking bad.
Yeah, even for a moment. For the briefest second.
Yeah, just try and solve all your problems in the most dramatic and permanent way possible.
Especially if you have one frustration while driving.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, don't, just turn that wheel.
Especially if you've got the wife like and that. Kids in the car, just end it. End it for them as well. You don't want them grieving you.
Yeah.
That would be bad.
The coward's way out, the kindness way out.
Yeah, that's right. Don't talk to anyone about anything you're going through.
No, don't burden people.
They don't want to hear it.
Don't bring them into your problems. I'm sure they would just like to be in Sydney with their wives.
I hate it. Being alive. I'd rather be dead with my wife. That's why I'm driving this car off a bridge. that was a real off the rails riff.
Yeah.
And then we get a little scene at the end where Alan goes and watches his book get pulped.
Yes.
Oh, not before he makes a speech at the
baptism.
Where he's trying to impress the woman from the radio. It's a very confusing speech. He just starts naming things from the '70s at one point, like Kojak.
Yes.
Then we get the scene of him watching his book get pulped. And it's very like, it reminds me of like one of those sort of like BBC 4 documentaries where it's very sort of genteel.
Yeah.
What
truly.
The like a one where they talk about the process of making something.
Yeah.
The pulp is then sent to a factory in Kent.
A lot of bottling footage.
Yeah.
I've seen of like bottles being filled and then.
It's the film that it seems to be shot on as well. It's just very like documentary, high school educational film.
It's the sort of process a North Korean leader would be watching on a Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, nodding approvingly our people are very strong and wise.
Just every press photo, like a bunch of guys in boiler suits stood next to their president who's also wearing a boiler suit and they're just like looking at goo coming out of a pipe and they're all like solemnly nodding.
Yeah, our country will last for 1,000 years.
Yeah, while wearing as many flags pinned onto their clothing as possible.
Did you guys ever watch the mockumentary Look Around You? It's on YouTube. It's like a mock-up of those kinds of 1980s style Technicolor like educational films. It's very funny. There's one on mathematics and the problem, and it's like, you know, put your pencils down. Now, here's the problem for this week. And it's like if Brian is 2/3 taller than Andy, and Andy is 1/2 the size of Imhotep, and Imhotep is 2/3 the size of blah, 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 look back at the end of the program and we will have your answer. And then the program happens. It's just satirical stuff. And then at the end, it comes back. The answer to the question, Imhotep is invisible. And there's like a guy on a thing putting his pencil down and being like, very good.
Probably had to be there. Just like what, man?
Oh, fuck.
No, pull it up now! Pull it up!
That was great.
I'll play it for you on my phone.
That was awesome.
That was awesome.
And Alan gets his little bag of pulp to take away with him. Pete, did you have any? Did you have any question marks?
No. Or? Tiz was.
Oh, Tiz was. Yeah, it's one of the 70s things that Alan Partridge names. It's a TV show that used to be presented by Chris Tarrant, who is the guy who used to present Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, yes, until they gave it to Clarkson.
Yeah,
and it was like
Jeremy Clarkson.
Yeah, so Clarkson now presents Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, but that's quite a recent thing.
Okay.
It was always like when people actually watched it, it was always Chris Tarrant, like in the 2000s. Like he was on it when we had the Coughing Major and all those guys. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and Tiz Was like a show for like children, where it was like a sort of like a magazine show that was like a bit like Madcap.
His was, yeah, you know, right.
Like giveaways and stuff. I mean, it's obviously well before my time, but I've seen like clips of it on those like It Shouldn't Happen on TV type clip shows that they have, that Britain loves
so that sort much. Of stuff. Yeah, Tiz was.
Yeah. All right. We can. I think that's in that that's case. We can wrap it up. Almost no thank Aiden very much for joining us. you got anything you'd like to plug to the Loyal Hogs?
Fuck, what
this is going to come
plug?
Out on Monday. So
on Monday, I mean, if you're in London, come and see my show Pianoforte at the Bill Murray on the 28th of August. Mm. I am currently
it's got a great Imhotep bit.
It's fantastic. The only Imhotep bit. At the Bill Murray on that particular night. I'm sure there are others later that weekend. it's been great at the Fringe. I'm having a great season. It's full every day. Blah, blah, blah,
it's
blah.
It's a great show.
Yep.
I saw lots of it in Australia.
Yes. So, I play classical piano and do stand up about the Frédéric Chopin's Nocturne in E-flat major. I'd love if you'd come and see it. 28th at the Bill Murray in Angel.
Do get along to that. And as ever, Pete has a podcast. You can listen to Ooh Spooky.
Three O's and an H.
That's right. And thank you. Also, we will have Edinburgh Fringe shows. If you're at the Edinburgh Fringe, please go and support Pete, Aiden, me.
Yes.
You can find where to find us.
Whoop, 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 whoop.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.